Hello and welcome back to the BuckleCast. This is Jason Rolison back with you. We're brought to you by the Pittsburgh Fan. Right now you can visit thepittsburghfan.com or stop in their store across the street from PNC Park to gear up for the 2019 season. And right now you can save 15% off your order, either in-store or online, with the promo code BuckleCast. All right, so we're back with episode 13. And before we go any further, I want to just give you guys something to look forward to. Actually, two somethings, actually. The first is the addition of Josh Taylor to the BuckleCast family. You guys know Josh, host from 93.7 The Fan and KDKA, has been on this podcast a bunch of times, has me on his show all the time, which I'm always grateful for. So he is going to be having his own little show here on the BuckleCast. It's going to be a 15-minute show that'll drop on Mondays. And what it is it's aimed to take a snapshot look at the week that was in Pirates baseball and set the table for the week ahead. Of course, this is all a master plan for me to get Josh Taylor into the podcast game, which I keep pressuring him to do, and one day he's finally going to crack and do it. But, of course, I can't think of anyone else to bring something new to the BuckleCast. And we want to make sure we give you guys the value for your time that you invest in listening to us. And I think it's going to be a great addition. So look for his first episode this upcoming Monday. The second teaser is to let you know that we're going to have a very big guest next week. I think I'll stop there. Because what kind of tease would it be if I gave you all the goods? So check back with next week's episode. I think you're going to enjoy it. All right, so let's get into this for real. The Pirates, who are currently playing the Reds to a 0-0 mark after six innings, have struggled out of the gate, and it's been seemingly a different thing every night, right? And now we learned today that they'll be without Corey Dickerson, who is placed on the 10-day injured list with a strained shoulder. But as per my DKPittsburghSports.com colleague John Parato, he has some sources that are telling him that he could miss up to a month. So, ouch. So how much will the team actually miss Dickerson? Of course, immensely. Dickerson was as reliable in the third spot in the lineup as they come. And what it did for the Pirates to just keep him in that lineup, kind of set him and forget it, was that it kind of allowed them to construct a lineup around him that made a lot of sense. You had Josh Bell at fourth. They can kind of leave him there knowing he'll have some protection behind him in Cervelli, and he'll get some good pitches to hit, presumably with having Dickerson on base in front of him more often than not. Now, all of a sudden, you have to move Cervelli up to third, where he hit tonight. You know, on paper, that's not a bad thing, but he did hit 153 from that spot last year. Not good for his career there at all, but still, he put up, you know, lest we forget, a 10.4% walk rate for his career, and that includes a 12.6% rate last season. And that was a 2.6 FWAR campaign, 125 WRC+. So perhaps he won't be the consistent Cervelli. Perhaps he won't be the consistent run threat, you know, ability to drive in a lot of runs from that third spot. So maybe he'll be an unconventional third hole hitter. But he can bring something to the table in Dickerson's stead, I believe. We'll have to see how it shakes out. But what I think it affects the lineup more, Dickerson's injury affects the lineup more, is now having to do something with Younghoe Kang, right? Today he hit fifth, had two more strikeouts, and I think at this point, as much confidence as Kang seemed to instill in all of us in spring training, at this point, you know, even 4 or 5 games in, he has equally given back that confidence in question marks, at least for me. And here's why, because he struck out twice more today, and that gives him 6 on the season and 19 plate appearances, so it's just about a little less than a third in strikeout rate, 33.3% or a little less. And yeah, I know it's small sample sizes, but the worrying factor here for me is that 5 of those strikeouts, including one of his 2 today, have come on either breaking or off-speed pitches. So there's a clear map to getting Kang out right now, and he'd better close it in a hurry because the Pirates were counting on him to give them such a boost at the third base position at a bargain rate at that. Not saying he has to go up and club a home run, and he is drawing a few walks, but I think there's a clear pattern emerging for pitchers to take advantage of a guy who has played in 2 major league games over the past 2.5 years now. So as good as he looked in 2016, as good as we thought that a full spring training would help him just hit the ground running, apparently that's not the case. We'll all eat a slice of humble pie on that one. But they got to close some holes in his swing sooner rather than later. And I think maybe this will be where the Eckstein's and Jacob Cruz kind of earn their keep, right? We've seen the Pirates' bats go into prolonged slumps over the past few years under Jeff Branson. Gregory Polanco comes to mind before he made his adjustments last year. can think of Cervelli at times, Marte at times. So if they can show him some data, him being gong to kind of look out for these pitches and kind of work his way into getting a pitch that he can really hit, if they could do that sooner rather than later, perhaps a little better than Jeff Branson could, I think they'd be worth their weight in gold at that point. But here's one last thing I want to talk about with Corey Dickerson's injury. And it's just something to raise an eyebrow at. No more, no less. Dickerson mentioned in his comments to the media that he's felt this pain in his strained shoulder for, and I quote, a few weeks now. It is absolutely worth mentioning and debating as to whether or not the Pirates would have been better served starting his season with a stint on the injured list. You know, yes, of course, the benefits would be obvious. You know, let him throttle down and get back up to a full spring training and get ready for his season. And yes, I understand that the team was already without Gregory Polanco, so they can get by with an 80% Dickerson, 85% Dickerson. They might be tempted to do so. But why does it always just seem like the Pirates never play injury issues correctly? The biggest ones that stand out in my mind are Neil Walker and Andrew McCutchen in 2014 that could have really derailed their playoff hopes late in the summer. Thankfully, they rallied in September. But why is it they always seem to be behind the eight ball and stuff like this? I don't have an answer, but it's definitely just food for thought. Okay, so if you're listening to this on Friday, which is when we are releasing it this week, tomorrow you'll see Trevor Williams start for the Pirates. Trevor looked great in his first start, pitching 6 shutout innings, a 6 strikeout, 3 hit ball against just 1 walk. And I thought it'd be great to bring in Alex Stumpf. You know Alex from this podcast, as well as BucksDugout.com and ThePointOfPittsburgh.com, where he wrote a great article today, I encourage you to check it out, about a new stat he invented called the Williams. So right after a quick word from our sponsor, we're going to hear from Alex. All right, so we're going straight to PNC Park now on the BuckleCast and welcoming in Alex Stumpf. He of ThePointOfPittsburgh.com, BucksDugout.com, and the River Blast podcast, among other places. So he's going to talk to us today about an interesting stat he may have created. So hello, Alex. How are you?
Hi, good. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Alex is right in the middle of a pitching change with Nick Kingham coming in for Jordan Lyles, and Jordan Lyles' first start with the Pirates. So look forward to his game recap at BucksDugout.com for his thoughts on that move and the rest of this game that's going on right now. But
oh, that is a terrible thing to plug. This is not a good game to plug a recap.
The people will read it, I'm sure. But what I wanted to talk about today, Alex, was you had a really good post today on ThePointOfPittsburgh.com about perhaps a new unit of measure for a good pitching outing. We had the quality start, we had the Maddox, and now we have the Williams. Can you tell us what the Williams is?
Yeah, if you've been paying any attention to Trevor Williams' starts, especially over the last half of 2018 and the first start of 2019, is he has a knack of being able to go 6 innings of shutout baseball, which I would consider an elite start. I mean, especially in this day and age in the game where there are expanded bullpens, if you can give the ball to the back end of your bullpen with no runs on the board, you have had a great day at the office. And that's something that Trevor does exceptionally well. Ever since he became a starter in May of 2017, no pitcher has more of these Williamses than him. The only guy who's even tied is Chris Sale. And it's also worth remembering that Chris Sale was in his prime at that time. Trevor was learning how to pitch in the major leagues in May of 2017. Mm-hmm. So it's not even exactly a fair comparison out of the two. And I decided to, okay, but we've seen, you know, that since 2018, Trevor leads all of baseball in this category. That's popped up on AT&T Sports. That's in some columns. I decided to take it a little further, and I looked at baseball history. Out of starters with at least 50 major league starts, he has the second best rate in baseball history since the live ball era at getting a Williams. The only person who's better is Jose Fernandez. The only other person to crack 20% is Clayton Kershaw. I mean, Trevor's at 24.1, I believe the number is. Like, one out of every 4 starts, he goes out and he gives you 6 shutout innings. 6 or more shutout innings, I should say.
I was going to say that if a stat is named after you, you should be in the top 3.
Yeah, you should be near the top of that list, yeah.
But even if he wasn't, that's really impressive company to be around. So I like the idea. I really do. Now, my question to you is, what has propelled him in your mind to be able to put up these starts where, you know, it's rather amazing, especially for his first start this year, which is really encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, this first start was actually a little different because he's dusting off that curveball, and he used that as a weapon with two strikes in that first start. One of them ended up being the infield single, and the other one was a strikeout. So if that's a new weapon he could add to the repertoire, especially to get a couple Ks, that'd be a big game changer for him, as if he needs more of a game changer, as I'm inventing stats about him. Trevor is a soft contact guy. He knows how to live around the edges and get the contact whenever he throws it there. He's not going to strike out a ton of batters. His walks are never going to get out of control. He's going to give up a lot of fly balls that are going to stay in the park. A lot of metrics are going to hate him unless he changes his pitching profile, which I don't think he will. But the ones that aren't going to hate him, the one that is going to like him, I guess I should say, is ERA. FIP, XFIP, Sierra, they're not going to like what he brings to the table, except if you actually watch the guy, he's going to go out there, he's going to pitch well, he's going to put up good results. I mean, that's what he's done, especially for the last half a year, but pretty much ever since he became a major league starter.
So last year we saw him kind of use the edges effectively, induce a lot of soft contact. So now if we think to ourselves he has this weapon that's burgeoning that he can use more, and also use his changeup better than I think anyone on the Pirates starting staff last year, is it going to be, for him to maintain this kind of production, is in your opinion, is it going to be keeping refining that weapon, or just basically going back to, you know, the tried and true location, soft contact, where, yeah, he'll have these starts, but he'll also won't have the higher, for him, strikeout totals than he did in his first start?
Yeah, I don't know how much the strikeout total will be higher as a result of it. I mean, it was higher in this last start, but again, unbelievably small sample size, and it wasn't like he went out and struck out a dozen. I think he finished with, what, 5 and 6 innings?
Yeah. Actually, six, I think. I'm going to double-check while you talk, so go ahead. I'll vamp.
Oh, 6 and 6 innings. Okay, so that's real good, but he did that also last year. It's not like this was an unheard-of amount for him.
Right.
I mean, usually he'll finish, like, 2 or 3 in a game, but 6 isn't that out of the question for him. I think he is going to still be the Trevor Williams at his core that we saw last year. I don't think adding one pitch to his repertoire and throwing it a couple times a game is going to drastically change that. But maybe it could trend him in a better direction for analytically. That would make this look a little more sustainable, you know, in the spreadsheet than it does looking in person.
Alex is actually covering the game right now, as I mentioned, so I didn't want to keep him too long, but I wanted to kind of give him some run here to get this article in your mind because it's worth a read. Again, that's thepointofpittsburgh.com. Alex, what I love about it this time of year is that we like kind of shove off these storylines to watch throughout the year, right, at the beginning of the year. For me, I'm going to be watching Chris Archer's pitch usage and sequencing. And now I think you've given the people something to really watch for with Trevor Williams, so thank you for that.
Hey, and it's not just Williams. I mean, yesterday, Tyon Blue, a Williams, because he went out for the 7th inning and gave up a homer.
He did.
It's really going to hurt him.
He did, and this could be something to watch.
And Lyles was pulled after 5 shutout.
Well,
so yeah. Close, but no cigar.
Well, we're going to read about that in your recap, right, at bucksdugout.com?
Yes, sure.
Okay.
Why not?
You can find him on Twitter at AlexJStumpf, STUMPF. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
All right, so special thanks to Alex for joining me on such short notice. I really appreciate that from him. Again, please follow him at AlexJStumpf on Twitter. So it's time to go to the hotline, the BuckleCast hotline today. Please, if you want to be a part of the show, you can call and leave us a voicemail or send us a text at 412-540-5192. And just to give you guys an idea of how I work with this, sometimes I will plan out the show. I have a few topics I want to talk about, and then I'll pull whatever voicemails or texts you guys come at us with. But sometimes you guys do all the prep for me because your texts are exactly what I want to talk about. So let's get it going. Eric has a comment. He says, I just heard Clint Hurdle talk about whether the starter will get a win or loss or no decision as part of his bullpen calculus. That can't be real in 2019. That, in my mind, is a fireable offense. And Erica's talking about Hurdle making a pitching change, taking Jameson Taillon out after 85 pitches, after seven innings. He went to the bullpen, went to Keona Kella. Kella, of course, went on to give up a home run, and the Pirates eventually lost the game in extra innings. Taillon was cruising. He finished the seventh inning very strong, and Clint Hurdle decided, let's get him a win by going to the bullpen. So, yeah, I share the frustration. I really do. The Pirates have this rotation and have this bullpen, and I think something that we're all going to have to watch for 2019 is going to be how Hurdle and the metrics that Neil Huntington gives him, how those bring to light how he will manage the two in relation to each other. Now, the temptation is it's early in the season. It's still a little cold. Let's maybe save some bullets for Taillon and use this bullpen for why we have it, which is to shut the door. It didn't work out that way, of course, but this kind of gives you an idea of what Hurdle might be thinking. There are so many factors that go into the decisions Hurdle makes, and a lot of them we won't see. And I don't mean to defend the guy, because I have big problems with some of the stuff he does as well. So I don't want to just blindly defend him, but we don't know the bio data that the Pirates are giving Hurdle to make these kind of decisions. We don't know just the feeling that Hurdle has talking to the guys every day, getting feedback from Ray Searidge and Justin Message. I guarantee you, we don't have the level of data that the Pirates do in terms of matchups between certain guys in their bullpen versus hitters coming up. Even if they've never seen them before, they have tons of data points on this kind of pitcher does well against this kind of hitter and vice versa, and they apply every single bit of that to the game at hand. So the scenario I'm painting for you, let's say in a month's time, into the really meat of the season at this point, let's say that Taillon has a similar start against a different team. Maybe his stuff, particular stuff, the slider, curveball, and the excellent four-seam fastball, plays well against the team they're facing on whatever given night is going to be they're going to be playing in a month. He may keep him in at that point. He really might. Where Hurdle gets in trouble, I believe, is saying things like that, right? It makes the Pirates seem backwoods. It makes it seem like they're from the backwoods of MLB right now. And I got to tell you, in certain ways they are. Because they were slow to get out of the pitch-to-contact mantra, the three pitches or less bullcrap. They were slow to get to the breaking ball kind of stuff. They're ahead on some other things, but their reputation as extreme forward thinkers, those days are gone, right? And they may come back, but perception often is reality, and if Clint Hurdle says things like this, they don't help. So not that they're necessarily worried about how they're perceived, Clint Hurdle is managing to win a ball game, but just go and say that. Say, I'm managing to win the ball game, right? I felt good going to Kella there. Even some stock, you know, textbook generic answers at that point would have been a lot more welcome than pointing to some outdated thinking. I think it's, at the end of the day, it might just be a perception problem. I have no real problem going to Kella there. Save some bullets for Taillon later in the season. I get it. Use this bullpen that is supposed to be a big strength for you. I get it. But just tell us the real reason why. Okay, our next text comes from Josh, who asks, what's the bigger problem for the Pirates right now? Defensive struggles or relief pitching? Well, I'm going to say relief pitching because I think that good pitching can get around, or at least that you get past, some defensive struggles. But with that being said, the Pirates bullpen, it's not that it's in shambles right now, but there's some serious question marks. Kyle Crick, of course, has been great. But then you have guys like Keona Kella and Richard Rodriguez, half of the vaunted four in the back end that we were expecting to be good, who have had some serious question marks as well. Keona Kella, got out of that jam a couple days ago, striking out some batters. Richard Rodriguez has given up two home runs on the season right now. And as I speak, against the Reds, he came in the eighth inning and got out of the inning without giving up a run, but also walked somebody again. So you kind of have some yin and yang there with him. And what I'm finding, or what I'm thinking, is that with those two guys in particular, Kella and Richard Rodriguez, if their secondary offerings are failing them, Kella's curveball, Rodriguez's slider, I really don't think either of them have as good of a fastball as you would think to get by as a reliever in today's baseball. Kella, of course, has a four-seam fastball, which has been, all in all, pretty good over his career. But he doesn't necessarily get a lot of swings and miss with it. Just 9.5% on the fastball last year. And he has to come into the zone with it too, a little bit, 54.9% zone rate last year. Hitters, last thing about it is that hitters don't really chase it very much. Just a 10.20 swing percentage. That swings at pitches outside of the zone on the four-seam fastball last year. So these guys, if their secondary pitchers aren't playing, they could get in a lot of trouble, as we've seen here. Now, Kella, I think, can get out of it a lot quicker because that curveball is so plus-plus. But with Rodriguez, if that slider is lacking bite, it's going to be a bad time for him. And I'm going to dig into that soon for DKPittsburghSports.com for my next mound visit and kind of try to figure out what exactly is holding Rodriguez back from really throwing that slider effectively. So keep your eyes peeled on those two. And as far as Nick Birdie goes, he's looked great in his first couple appearances. Struggled in his last one. But I think that's regular growing pains. I'm really not too worried about him per se. But I am worried, it's not quite worried, but I am interested to see how the stuff, quote-unquote, will translate. We all remember the Pirates had a guy with electric stuff. Maybe you remember him. His name was Charlie Morton. Could never quite harness it during his time in Pittsburgh. So one wonders what they can do to get Birdie at full effectiveness. I think it'll come. His stuff is that good. But there may be just some regular growing pains from now until we see that. I'm not too worried about the other guys. I mean, Francisco Liriano at this point should, and I thought this going into the season, but I really think he should not be trusted with any high leverage situations right now. Just has not looked good, has not had the control we hoped we would see from him. Two walks against one strikeout in a full inning of work so far this season. Then you have Felipe Vázquez, whose stuff is there, but in my opinion has thrown a lot of waste pitches so far this season. Sometimes with Felipe, it could take a little bit to get dialed in, so we'll have to see, you know, from an appearance-to-appearance basis, how well we can track that. So that's about how I feel with the bullpen, but I really do think that good pitching can get around bad defense. So our last text today comes from Fuzznot on Twitter. Okay. And he kind of asks a similar question, but I'm going to take it in a different way. He asks, any reason to believe the bullpen won't iron itself out and the Pirates will be fine? The bats are showing life and the starting rotation is living up to its potential. Trying to be optimistic here, but I'm really not that worried just yet. A lot of baseball left. You're right. Everything we've said in this podcast so far is based off of an extremely small sample size. With that being said, I think maybe we all got lulled into a certain way of thinking about this team in the offseason. Yes, we all know the strength of this team is going to be the pitching. But over the course of a 162-game season, there's going to be times where one unit is going through a valley where the other one is going through a peak, right? Or vice versa. I think it's going to be how these all interplay together. And I think, again, that's why maybe we shouldn't give Clint Hurdle such a bad rap when he decides to go to a bullpen a little early. Let's say the offense is sputtering over like a week-long stretch. Hurdle might realize he has to really rely on his pitching right now, and that might affect how he, when he pulls starters and how he approaches that. It's all going to interplay together, and I think this is a good lesson right now for us to remember that. I really do. So we're going to stop right there on the BuckleCast for this week. We're going to be back next week with the debut of Josh Taylor's show on Mondays, and we're going to have a very special guest interview next week. I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait for you to hear it, actually. So again, please call or text the show, 412-540-5192. Follow me on Twitter, at JRollisonPGH. And if you really like the show, the best thing you can do for us is tell a friend. That's the best way to help us grow. Word of mouth is always the best. If you really, really like the show, you can support us by pledging a small monthly donation. Just check the link in the show notes of this podcast. Thanks, and have a good night.